The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012. Released October 14th for PS3 and Xbox 360.
Football Weekly, today, Super Triple Derby Roundup. Bosch, Ken's men beat Moy's boys. Bish, Spurs take advantage of rear gunners. Bash, Cottagers leave ours looking ragged. That plus the fat side order of Chelsea, Man United and Man Not So United and De Gea's donut misery in our top Premier League roundup. Also, Carlo Ancelotti meets Bear. If McLaren falls at Forest, does it make a noise? And Italy, a big win for Napoli, a big win for Juve, a big win for little Sebastiano Giovinco. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Greg Ruffley joining us today on Football Weekly.
Hi, James.
Hi, Greg. You've been married in the meantime, haven't you?
I have been married.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well done to you.
Thank you.
But you are still Greg Ruffley.
I'm still Greg Ruffley at the moment, but I'm selling my house, and it would just mean it'd be a legal nightmare if I was to change my name to Bukowski at this moment. So,
right.
In the future, I will become Polish.
Okay, excellent. Barry Glendening, nice to see you again.
And always a pleasure to see you too, James.
That's nice. And Paolo Bendini, thanks for joining us.
I'm mostly interested in whether Greg is angling for a call-up to some Polish national team. Ooh. And that's part of this ruse.
Yeah.
Have you seen me play football recently?
I have. You're a lot better than I have. Not saying a lot.
Interesting. Paolo, big weekend.
Was a big weekend.
Spurs look impressive, don't they?
It didn't seem to me like it was a massive surprise to see the flaws that Arsenal had. And I'm not sure that I actually thought Tottenham were quite as good as I thought they were going to be, even though they were definitely good value for the win. I actually thought that Adebayor and Van der Vaart, I thought that they were going to have... they're going to take more advantage of that back line. And I suppose in some ways they did, because there were chances and Szczesny had to make a couple of fantastic saves in the game to keep the score where it was. But I don't know. I'm not sure that either team really excelled, but clearly Tottenham came away much happier with the afternoon than Arsenal would.
Hmm.
How much did you think Bakary Sagna going off affected Arsenal? Because Jenkinson came on and he's looked really inexperienced, and at times when he plays at right back, it drags the centre-backs out of position as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. I think it's going to be one of Arsenal's biggest concerns coming out of the game is Sagna going out, because you've got a defence where not a lot has been going right recently. And even Sanya's had his down games, but I do think he sort of remained with the probably the most consistent performer in that back line, the most probably the one of the highest quality players in that back line. He's an excellent right back when he's playing well, and I think that having Jenkinson in there, if that's going to be the long term solution, it is going to be tricky, because obviously not the long term solution, but he hasn't had the greatest start at Arsenal. He's obviously finding the step up problematic in some ways, and that's not to say he can't improve, but I think he's certainly had struggles so far.
Well, he's certainly going to get a chance to find his feet, because Sanya's out until what, after Christmas?
It's a broken leg, and they said 3 months.
It's a floating fracture.
To me, I think broken leg is going to be longer than 3 months, and Arsenal do have this way of telling you an injury is going to be 3 weeks, and then the next thing you know, Thomas Rosicki hasn't been seen in 2 years. I don't know. It could be a bit longer than that.
All right, well, that's enough about the Gunners. What about Spurs, eh? They look terrific once again. Scott Parker, eh, Barry?
Well, everyone seems to be obliged to rave about Scott Parker all the time. He got voted Player of the Year by Football Writers last season, much to everyone's astonishment. But I thought that Ledley King was Spurs' star player yesterday. I was impressed with the performance, but I thought a draw would probably be a fair result. I didn't think they were much better than Arsenal. Arsenal played well for good bits of the game, and so did Spurs. It could be argued that, and it has been argued, that Raphael van der Vaart's goal shouldn't have been allowed, because he handled in the build-up, or controlled the ball with his arm. And then Gervinho had a shocking miss, which, if the ref had penalised van der Vaart, Gervinho had scored, could easily have gone the other way. And if my auntie had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Indeed so. A refreshing bit of analysis there, Barry. So nothing dramatic to draw from this North London derby, apart from the fact that Arsenal look well and truly out of the honours chase this year.
Do you know, I think the biggest concern, actually, perhaps even beyond the Sagna injury for Arsenal, I thought was at 2-1 down, after that second goal had gone in, you expected something. You thought there'd be some sort of reaction, some sort of response, and there really was nothing. And there were just a few individual players who really stuck out. Like, it was about a minute left in injury time still, and the ball went out for a throw-in. And Andre Arshavin didn't even jog. I mean, he walked really slowly to get the ball, and just there was no urgency. There was no sense of, oh, come on, let's try and make something happen here. Mm. There was just flatness everywhere. And I think that, you know, that's going to be the point that people are going to look at and say, well, again, and obviously the board of giving him the full backing, but that's the sort of thing people look at and go, well, why can't the manager get his team giving everything from first to last?
I know the point's been made a million times before, but they really do just lack somebody with teeth who'll get them going at times when things aren't going their way. And Spurs were more aggressive yesterday throughout the game.
And I do think that's why, and I understand what Baz is saying, that Parker sometimes it goes too far the other way, but I do think that's the thing that certainly some Arsenal fans will look at and wonder why there wasn't any interest in a player like Parker in the summer when Tottenham went and got him. And he did have a good game yesterday. I actually think as well Tottenham, you know, perhaps wasn't kind enough to them before. They have some of their young players coming through are looking quite tidy as well.
Hmm. But I had a pint with Paolo after work on Friday, and he was utterly confident that Spurs would win, like sort of saying, put your house on it, they will win. So I suspect Arsenal may have played a bit better than you were.
Yeah,
you thought they would.
I thought there were points in the game where I think the expectations of that defence are very low at the moment, for obvious reasons. They haven't played very well. I thought the game against Olympiacos, despite winning it, Arsenal were deeply unimpressive. And I actually think that Tottenham, aside from two games against the Manchester clubs this season, have been playing like a team who look like they're going to be at fourth place. So to me, I expected a bigger gulf between the teams than there was.
That's a big shout, Paolo Bandini. So they're going to get fourth. Who's going to miss out?
Hey, I didn't say they're going to get it. I said they're playing right now like a team that's going to get it. There's a long way to go before the end of the season.
In your face, Jimbo.
Well, I'm not sure.
There was some interesting sort of side theatre as well, because after the game, Clive Allen got the right hump with Arsene Wenger because he didn't shake his hand, called him Two Bob. But, and then some of the fans excelled as football.
There was some very unpleasant chanting.
Yes,
I'm not sure
sides.
About the Clive Allen business. There's a manager who's just seen his team lose in embarrassing circumstances, because it is embarrassing to see professional footballers with such a lack of care and attention there. Why be surprised if he's not in the best of moods?
I think, first of all, yeah, the chants were despicable, and you can't defend that at all. And I do think that possibly some people, certainly some Arsenal fans, are going to look at this though still and feel like that Tottenham were doing a bit of point scoring after this game, and there was Allen with the handshake, and there was also Redknapp coming out and making a point of criticising the Arsenal fans for chanting, which, again, the fans who did that chanting, not defending them at all, but actually Tottenham's fans also sang some pretty despicable chants against Arsene Wenger in that game, and it might have been more admirable if Harry Redknapp had come out afterwards and said, I think both sets of fans should be ashamed of what's happened.
Well, you're absolutely right. I'm going to move on now to the Merseyside derby. Was there any unpleasant chanting in the Merseyside derby? Greg, you were there.
I've got to actually say it was quite a tame derby.
Was it?
From an atmosphere point of view, considering, you know, there's been some really kind of red-hot atmospheres over the years, so it was quite tame. I know at the end there was some Everton fans threw a lighter, pack of woodbines, some coins at Luis Suarez and Charlie
was,
Adams.
There was a brilliant bit where Bellamy, I think it was, taking the corner, and there was someone there right in the front. I don't think he himself had thrown anything, but he saw him right on Match of the Day, who seemed to be flicking Vs at Bellamy from right in the front row, but at the same time had his second hand filming him on his video camera phone. So
wow.
I don't know if he was trying to get, you know, the reaction and the action at the same time. Or
new media at Goodison. But that's quite a technological advance for Goodison, because, I mean, it is quite an old stadium, you know. So
what did you make of the game, Greg?
He started off a typical derby. It was quite low on quality. It was a very fast game. It seemed like all the world to be heading for so many over the years, which would maybe be a 0-0 or, you know, a scrappy 1-1 draw or something. But, I mean, the sending off completely changed everything. And I'm sure everybody's seen the sending off, and there won't be one person who's seen it who would say it was a sending off. And everybody's right when they say it's barely a foul. I mean, if you look at Rodwell comes in, he's got his eyes on the ball, he slides in, he wins the ball, then he slides into Suarez. But he's completely in control of his body weight. It's not like a foul, for instance, when you see somebody go for the ball and they're stamping on the ball, and they know full well that the full body weight's going to go through and cause the player an injury, like you've seen over the years, where you get a broken leg and somebody says, oh, I won the ball. And you say, well, you knew exactly what you were doing. You were going through the ball to hurt that player. And I think Atkinson has misinterpreted his tackle as that kind of tackle.
Do you think Suarez and Lucas have something to do with that? the way that Atkinson misinterpreted the tackle.
Oh, did they? I mean, I've seen it live, and I've only saw it one replay. I didn't see whether they had any influence on the referee.
Well, Suarez goes down as if not only has he been tackled, but there's been a gunman on the the grassy knoll over there.
I mean, who'd have thought Suarez might be, you know,
And then Lucas comes over and brandishes imaginary cards.
Mm. Well, that doesn't help, but I do think Martin Atkinson had blown up. He'd blown his whistle already, hadn't he?
And
was probably processing what he saw in his mind. But what he saw, I don't know. I can only imagine he's filled in some blank somewhere and thought he saw a different type of tackle.
The only thing I would say is there's a moment, I think, when you see it live action, there's a moment where there's just a flash of his studs, and it's actually, when you see it on the replay, it's after he's won the ball, he's got his foot on the ball, and he sort of flicks his studs up to get some clearance on the ball so that the ball's going to travel after he's won it, so it's actually going to get away from the Liverpool player. But
his slide's coming to an end anyway. Yeah. It's not like he's
tucks
flying
his feet
through.
Away as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's been really unlucky.
I wanted to ask you about Andy Carroll, and first off, Tim Howard and penalties. Did you know that he has saved four of the last seven penalties he's faced in the Premier League?
I think he saved that one because, well, first of all, the ball bounced about three times before he even got to the goal. It wasn't the best penalty by Dirk Kuyt. But Kuyt scored in exactly the same corner against Tim Howard, I think, two derbies previous at Goodison. And I think Kuyt had obviously thought, I'm going to put it in that same corner again, and Howard had just second-guessed it. So, I mean, it wasn't a good penalty at all.
Very few penalties, you know, just interrupting you, but very few penalties have actually been successful this year in the Premier League.
Really?
Yeah. When I say very few, only 9 of the 20 penalties taken in the Premier League so far this season, which is, what, 45%, Barry, would you say?
I would.
Yeah.
Although I'm probably wrong.
It's an interesting statistic, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Very anyway, back to your point, Greg.
You're only saying it's an interesting statistic because it's the only statistic you have.
I have another one here. Do you want my other one?
Okay.
I was saving it for the Andy Carroll chat.
All right.
Is that
okay,
what you're
we're going to Andy Carroll now. I mean, a lot of people said, oh, Andy Carroll starting to repay, you know, the faith Dalglish has shown in him. I thought he was absolutely... I've been quite defensive of Andy Carroll so far because what I've seen of him, I thought he's still finding his feet. Now, he was all over the place in the derby. He was on a completely different wavelength. And at half-time, I thought, I think Dalglish has just got to take him off. There can't be any reason not
to take
him off.
When you say he was on a different wavelength, how?
Well, in terms of the passing that was coming forward from players like Lucas and Adam and Suarez and the little interplay that they were trying to play, Carroll was just making the wrong runs. The ball was coming into him, bouncing off. He was making the wrong runs. He wasn't helping Suarez in any way by being close to him when he needed him to be, and he's been too far away, you know, kind of, many times. And he looked like he wasn't so much unfit. He just looked like he was a different. His brain just wasn't in the right place.
It's the drink, isn't it?
Well, no. I don't think so.
Right.
But he wasn't even physical. I mean, if he's not understanding the play, then at least do what you want a big 6'4", 6'5" striker to do, and throw this down around a bit and give him what for. It's a derby as well, and he looked like Peter Crouch at times when the ball was coming in. He was leaning back and he wasn't throwing his whole body weight into headers and actually trying, which, I mean, that's kind of inexcusable. If things aren't going your way, at least try. And then Dalglish left him on, and I think he was in the right place at the right time for the goal. I'm hoping it gives him a lot of confidence and he can...
Do you think that's the problem then? Confidence?
I mean, yeah, I think he's a confidence player because a lot of people... I mean, he's taking so much stick, but he's 22 years old. I mean, we'd say, oh, he's a kid, 22 years old. If someone's in our office now, we'd say, oh, there's that young kid over there, 22 years old.
You know? Steinberg.
Yeah, he's a bit like Steinberg. You think he's older than what he is and maybe you can criticise him a bit more than
Steinberg's
you do.
Steinberg's a martyr for drink as well. Always hanging out with the optic.
But yeah, anyway...
Is there a chance that Jacob is going to get stationed with you for a few months just to calm him down?
What, sent to live with me?
Yeah.
No, there isn't. None whatsoever.
Greg, back to you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of Steinberg living with Barry.
Yeah.
Good sitcom material.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, I think, yes, he is a confidence player. This might give him the confidence that's required. But also... He might also be on the bench for a few more games this season than we think because he might struggle to fit in with Liverpool's ethos.
Well, as you say, he's only 22. Yeah. Thanks for time for him to make his mark.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. And not too many conclusions we can draw from this because Atkinson's decision completely skewed any kind of fair reading.
Yeah, well, I mean, one conclusion you can draw is that I think Liverpool is still very much a work in progress, and they've been good at times and they've been quite poor at times. They're somewhere in between against Everton. And even with 10 men, I think Everton caused Liverpool some problems at the back. And Luis Saha was very impressive. I thought he was great. And he's going to be very important for Everton this season, and they need to keep him fit, which he
There's a thought.
Struggles City, yeah. Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Saha's just always brilliant when he's fit for more than two games at a time. It's just that never has happened.
Oh, they used to say the same thing about Robin van Persie, but look at him. True. Hasn't missed a game through injury all year. Now, the other big story on Sunday afternoon in Derby land was the big affair at Craven Cottage. How about that? Fulham scoring 6 goals in a single game, not a season or anything, in a single game against QPR. Did you know they've gone 208 games without scoring more than 3 goals, and then along comes 6 in one go, Barry?
This is crazy. Fulham just don't beat people 6-0. It doesn't happen. It shouldn't be allowed. And I don't ever want it to happen again.
Indeed.
The game wasn't on TV, which is quite unfortunate for poor old Fulham, because they're unlikely to beat anyone 6-0 anytime soon again. And hopefully they'll get a nice DVD out of it. And maybe Joey Barton might pipe down for a while now.
Both unlikely, I'd suggest.
I think even Neil Warnock didn't try to blame anyone afterwards. And there was apparently, and I don't know if this is true, much the same way as I didn't know whether or not the Frank Lampard huffing off in a strop a few weeks ago story was true. Adele Trapped was substituted at halftime and left the stadium in his tracksuit and went and waited for a bus somewhere.
Yeah.
At a bus stop to go home.
Apparently so. Do you remember that story?
Conjuring up images of the time Radi Antic during the 80s was seen in a tube station wearing his full Luton kit after a game.
Yeah.
Waiting for it.
Well, the football people on public transport, you have your Christian Gross. Yeah. Yeah. Robinho famously or supposedly took a bus on his way
to the Trafford Centre.
Yeah.
To do his shopping, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't know how to get there, and somebody said, oh, there's a bus goes directly there. So he got on the bus and said, 2 singles to the Trafford Centre, please.
Bless.
Yeah.
All right. If you have any public transport footballer-related anecdotes, do send them in, because my word, we need them. Okay, let's talk about the Cottagers. Does this mean that the sleeping giants by the banks of the Thames have awakened and look out Premier League?
Well, it probably means look out 7th or 8th place in the Premier League and maybe get into Europe again, you know, through the back door. I'm sure Martin Yol has got, you know, new designs for Fulham himself, and maybe wants to be a more attacking team. And, you know, he's quite an optimistic character, Yol, and I imagine he's quite you know, like having your funny uncle around, and, you know, he's like, oh, there's funny uncles over there, you know, gives you the confidence you need to go and do the things in life.
I'm not sure that his reign at Craven Cottage has been characterised by smiles and bonhomie thus far.
And card tricks.
No,
and giving you money to go to the shop and buy some sweets.
The impression was that things weren't entirely rosy before this, and he hinted a little bit at this in his post-game comments about the fact that he liked Zamora a bit more now that he'd actually gone and scored a goal, and maybe Zamora would like him. But, you know, whatever's happening there, it seemed to work in this game. And what does it mean about QPR, for that matter? That's what it means about QPR. I suspected as much. That's part one. It can only get better in part two. Right, part two. And our Premier League analysis continues with Chelsea. They did get a big win. Nice to see things finally coming together for Fernando Torres and co. How many did he get? Was it a hat-trick for the Spaniard? What?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Spaniard was suspended
because
he got sent off, and he must have been absolutely tearing his hair out because he could have filled his boots at
Reebok. Is it a coincidence that their best performance of the season came when said Spaniard was out?
Or could it be a coincidence that their best performance of the season came against Bolton?
That's 6 defeats in a row for Bolton.
Yeah, they're not.
But they have played very, very, very tough games.
Yeah, they've also had. They've been really unlucky with injuries from the start. The problem, Owen Coyle is now, he's trying to enforce this kind of more free-flowing football on Bolton, which is already well when you've got, I think it was Chung Lee and Stuart Holden in midfield last season, who were really impressive and can move the ball quickly. I mean, they've both got long-term injuries now and are out, and they've got more physical players in there, and he's not using him in the old Bolton tradition that Sam Allardyce had, which was to kind of get stuck in and make it very difficult for teams. He's still trying to tell them to play a kind of free-flowing football, and it's just not working at the moment. And they have had a very difficult start, but also Chelsea, where I thought Chelsea were really, really good yesterday. They were playing some really nice passing football, and Mata Morelles, who I think was a really good signing before the transfer window, and in midfield have just added a bit more spice to it. And I think Lampard is like, he's people are, you know, saying that writing him off a few weeks ago. I think when I was away, he was getting written off apparently. And
it's only about one second.
You know, and you come back and he's come back and got a hat-trick. Yeah. But no, I mean he's been consistently good for years, and he had an injury.
I think I might take issue with that. Actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean,
he was consistently good for years, and then he had a season when he wasn't. Because for me, consistently,
he scored 13 goals last season, and that was in a poor season for him.
Yeah,
and
was
previous to that, he scored 20 goals every season.
Yeah, so that's my issue with the consistency thing. I don't think he was as effective, but then.
But I mean, Chelsea last year, he was playing in the team last year. Chelsea, who collectively were struggling for form last season. I think individually, I think he's been very good for a long time, and he's 33 years old now. I think it might just be that he needs to be dropped every so often in order to be able to give it his all and score hat tricks and score more goals in games.
I do think that's a really fair point. I think that we often sort of want to go straight with players to when they've sort of reached that point where they're getting on a little bit. We sort of want to reach the point where, oh well, he's done, he's no good anymore, and that's the end of it. When it is a bit more fluid than that. You know, it may be better for some players to be playing 25, 30 games a season. They might be able to be something.
It's a squad game as well. I mean, like, people still have opinions as if it's your best 11 and, you know, and he's being dropped. Oh, that's it. It's over for him. And it's a squad game, and you drop him for one game and bring him back for another.
The only issue you've got then is just if he's not happy with it, which he seems to be okay at the moment.
He scored a hat-trick in 59 minutes, just like Andy Johnson.
Just like Andy Johnson and just like Abdelau for Hanover.
All in the same day.
Yeah.
Coincidence?
Spooky.
It is spooky.
Did you put a bet on that one?
Yeah. Can you imagine? Anyway, so there you go. Chelsea looking good, and I mean good. Bolton with one or two problems. What about the teams from Manchester? Now, Man City, they had a big victory away to Blackburn Rovers. The bad news here, Aguero's out. The good news that Balotelli seems to have hit a rich vein of form.
Well, it's funny with Balotelli, isn't it? I remember shortly after he'd signed, there was an interview with Gary Cook in The Guardian where they were talking to him about the implications of financial fair play and all the rest of it. And Balotelli was one of these things he sort of held up as, well, you know, it was a big investment, but, you know, the manager really made the case, and we talked about how he could be a long-term investment. And, okay, it seems like a lot up front, but actually his value to us makes it worth that. Now, since that, they've gone on to spend far more money on players who are older, I think. And so it sort of undermined that logic a bit. But it has felt a bit like, well, you went and made that big... you went and made that discussion about how you've signed this player who is worth the money and is great. And now suddenly, when's he going to play? He's all the way down the pecking order. So it is really good to see him back in the team and playing some football. I know he's been called up to the last... to the Italy squad. So he's a talented player. A very difficult player to manage and will probably continue to be so for a while, but he's a very talented player.
That's good. How long is Aguero going to be out for?
3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Blackburn Rovers, meantime, with one or two things to sort out. Steve Keane and the boys are over in India, handily enough, doing a little early season tour, taking advantage of the rest weekend coming up at the end of this week, and probably having a bit of a chat about the future direction of the club. They may even, I don't know, be putting together a little offer for Carlos Tevez, because they like a big name player at Ewood Park, don't they?
That one happening.
Let's talk about things that we do know about, like Manchester United's keeper and his donut shame. Is this why Anders Lindegaard was in goal, a not light-fingered donut fiend, David De Gea?
I have no idea is the answer to whether or not that was he was in goal. All I know is that David De Gea was reported to have gone into a Tesco's.
Yes.
And have happily munched away on a, I believe it was a Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah, Krispy Kreme donut. So he basically just ate it before. Yeah.
And then was strolling merrily on out without having purchased any goods.
He's a Premier League footballer.
And someone stopped him and told him that this was not acceptable behaviour.
Right.
If that story about him is true, then yes. I must confess to some pick and mix shame over
all right,
the weekend.
Barry. No better place than Football Weekly.
In the same retail outlet.
You ate pick and mix without paying for it?
I always eat pick and mix without paying for
really? It. Really? Shopkeepers.
Isn't that why it's there? I thought it was sorted there just so you'd have something
like
to nibble
on
while
a bar
you're...
In,
while you're going around buying your other chattels.
No, but I don't know.
I did buy some stuff, though.
Did you? So, nice. Yeah. In general, not an impressive performance. Norwich with better finishing. It's a big if. Your aunt, your uncle, etc., Barry.
Leave my family out of it.
Right, but they could have won this game. What a shot that would have been.
It would have been a huge shock.
Yep. But they would have deserved it.
Yes.
Yep. With better finishing.
It's important for United to get the defenders back fit again, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's just important for United to get the defenders back fit again. That's going to be their weakness this season, if they have any, because they're always amazing going forward.
Yeah.
So I think the key thing is that Chelsea's defence, you know, is quite solid in, you know, City's as well. So, I mean, they could contend with them.
It is an interesting point, isn't it? Because obviously with the Basel result the other day, you're suddenly seeing these gaps. And I think right from the beginning of the season, if you went back and looked at the preview pieces from the first couple of weeks, people were going, oh, is United's defence going to be okay with seeing all these players against Tottenham, against Arsenal? Now, as it happened, Arsenal, I think it was the first time they'd scored two goals at Old Trafford in a very long time. They just also conceded eight. It is a situation where it's sort of been not exposed because United have been playing very well up front. And perhaps there is actually still some weakness in that defence that just hasn't been shown up. Although, having said that, isn't this exactly the point we're supposed to trot out the old cliche about playing badly and winning games and winning titles?
All right, trot it out then.
I think I just did. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go. Well, a comforting performance. The defeat notwithstanding for Norwich. Let's just quickly whiz through one or two other games. Oh, Greg, you have a finger up.
No, yeah, just the Villa Wigan game.
Yeah.
Before the Villa game, there was a lot of talk how Martinez could have actually been the manager of Aston Villa for this fixture, and in fact, he turned the job down and decided to stay at Wigan when he was given assurances about his job when they stayed up. And since then, I'm wondering whether he thinks, oh God, I wish I'd had taken that job. And also, maybe Villa fans are thinking, this Alex McLeish bloke perhaps isn't as bad as we thought, you know. He's shored the defence up. I mean, they've had five draws, but I mean, at least they've not been losing games. They beat Wigan 2-0 at the weekend, and Wigan's team seems to be very naive again, and pretty much as it has been under Martinez. Sometimes they play attractive football, but they just don't know how to defend in too many games. And I think they're going to go down this season if they stick with Martinez. And I don't know who they'll get in instead of him.
Villa fans, though, must be warming to McLeish at this point.
Well, I mean, you'd think if they've got any sense about them, they'd be thinking, well, you know, he seems to have a plan, and he's maybe a lot more of a long-term plan than other managers would have.
Right.
And he's made some decent signings. He's got Agbonlahor playing again, and Agbonlahor was a player who last season was kind of non-existent, and this season he's looked fantastic for them.
He certainly has. What, are you glaring at me now?
No,
Eric?
Sorry.
Yeah, you are. You're glaring at me.
I'm not glaring at
you. I am. I mean, you are. Okay. Sunderland West Brom, eh, Barry?
Yeah, Sunderland 2-0
Bruce
down.
Bruce out rang the chant at the Stadium of Light.
Yeah, and he got a big hug from Niall Quinn at the end of the game, his boss. So I'd say it's a case of Bruce in for the time being, anyway. He came out with some strength. I mean, Sunderland were 2-0 down inside 7 minutes, which is, if that even. And came back to get a draw, and so, you know, hats off to them for doing that, but they shouldn't have gone 2-0 down in the first place. But Bruce made some weird comments after the game about fans having at the Stadium of Light, having, or what fans are left there, because there was about 10,000 empty seats or more, having unrealistic expectations, which I think is very unfair, because they just want to see the team make a bit more effort, and they're not expecting them to qualify for the Champions League or anything, but just having spent quite a lot of money on 10 players over the summer, you know, if you're stringing a few good results together isn't too much to ask, I don't think.
Surely, yeah. Newcastle, in the meantime, this only makes things worse, doesn't it? They're up in third place now, although they were a little bit fortunate having that victory over Wolves at the weekend. How about Swansea?
Sorry, just one quick point about Newcastle. I asked this on Twitter the other night. At what point do we have to start giving Mike Ashley some credit for Newcastle's current position? You know, they're not going to finish third, but they're doing very well, and they've got themselves a good team, some good players that they brought in the cheap. He's offloaded a lot of expensive deadwood, reduce the debt, and Newcastle fans seem very happy, and journalists seem very happy to blame Ashley for everything that goes wrong there, but they seem quite very reluctant to give him any credit for anything that's going right. And when I asked the question on Twitter, nobody that supported Newcastle was prepared to concede that it was anything to do with him. It was in spite of him rather than because of him.
They've been going on lots of team building exercises every Monday as well, apparently.
What kind of thing do they do, Greg?
Paintballing.
Oh, right.
Which could go horribly wrong. Like, did you remember, what was that Geordie TV kids programme called? Yeah, Biker Grove. That went horribly wrong, and PJ or whatever your name was got blinded. They've been doing that go-karting and bowling, apparently.
Really? They should do alphabet team bonding.
Oh, because
that would be great. Like,
how does running around shooting paint at each other help team spirit.
I don't know.
I hate paintball. Producer Ben. And I hate bowling.
I reckon there's only one way to for Barry to find out.
No, I've done it. And it hurts.
Right.
Covered with in our, little bruises.
With our new sponsor, I reckon we could fund a couple of away weekends for the Football Weekly team. I mean, you laugh, Barry, but before you and I had that three-week sojourn together in Vienna, we barely spoke to each other. And now we speak to each other. So there you go.
Yeah, but I hated you then and I still hate you.
He's joking, listening. Anyway, Swansea Stoke, how about this? Swansea are the first promoted club to keep four clean sheets in the first four home games. Stat-tastic. Magnificent. Well, that wraps things up for the weekend's action in the Premier League. More to come in a fortnight. Of course, next weekend it's international qualifiers. Euro 2012, we'll be looking at England's preparations for Montenegro, all that kind of exciting news, etc. in Thursday's Football Weekly Extra. Right now, though, more music and then part three. How about this? Steve McLaren, eh? Which is the real Steve McLaren? The whiz kid who goes over to FC 20 and turns them around, or who gets Borough into cup finals? Or the bumbling fool who ends up on his bottom after 112 days at Nottingham Forest and wanders around with a brolly at England?
I suspect he may be the latter. Someone on one of our blogs had an interesting post suggesting that the reason he did so well at FC 20 was because the club is so well organised, and that when McLaren went over there, the staff were already in place. He didn't bring his own people in there. He was told, you know, this is who you're working with, this is what they do. And his sole responsibility was of as first team coach. So that's not what he was used to at England.
You could argue that you could be the best teacher in the world,
yes,
and you could be a very good school. But if you take that teacher and put him into, you know, a school in the middle of a council estate which is failing, and
right,
tell him to try and enforce those ideas on those children,
right,
you could fail miserably. But, and I'm not saying they were all, you know, Nottingham Forest, they don't know how to play football, don't know how to understand the instructions. But I do think maybe McLaren has gone in there and thought that people would take his ideas up more quickly. Also, he asked for money as soon as he went in, so he was obviously a little bit afraid that he wasn't going to be able to get, you know, the kind of players he wanted into Forest. And unfortunately, he's gone horribly wrong. And I think that's the risk taking a job in lower down the leagues, is that if you fail lower down, it's hard to get back up again, which is why the likes of all these former footballers, like, you know, Alan Shearer, who's got aspirations to be a manager, even though he's got very little evidence that he knows anything about football or managing a football team, will not take a job lower down. Because as soon as you fail there, there's the kind of snobbery that you can't go back up again. Now, it could be the case that McLaren could be a decent Premier League manager again, but his reputation now is really going to it's going to take a kicking, and I think he might be on the match of the day sofa very soon with the likes of Alan Shearer and other failed managers or managers who haven't risked all.
I think it's an interesting point that Barry made about the first team coaches, because actually there was an interview just today in La Repubblica with Carlo Ancelotti, and amongst other things he sort of talks about Alex Ferguson, because he's always said that Hiddink is his favourite manager, and he gets asked if that's still the case, and he says, well, actually Ferguson is right up there now. I'm beginning to think that he might be there as well. But he gets into Ferguson's methods, and he actually sort of says Ferguson doesn't do very much hands-on in training a lot of the time. He devolves a lot of it. He has his coaches look after it, and he's more of an overseeing role. And I think that there perhaps are different kinds of managers in that sense. There are those managers who want to be there and guiding players around and telling them specifically what to do. There might be some who want to do that but aren't very good at it as well, but are good at the other part of being a manager, the overarching, you know, management in the literal sense that you'd understand from any other job, I guess.
Does Carlo spill the beans on what happened with Ray Wilkins that day?
He doesn't know.
He
does spill the beans on what you should do if you are confronted with a bear in a forest.
Oh.
Which
doing the inevitable or what?
he's been in Canada for a couple of months. He's on TV in Italy now. He's doing Sky punditry. But he's been in Canada for a couple of months. And he said he'd been in Canada. And the interviewer, who's Gianni Mura, who's a great Italian journalist, but he says, the thing with Canada is there's lots of bears. And he said, I know, I saw a bear. And they got into this conversation about what you're supposed to do. And apparently you're not supposed to run away.
Right.
Because they're faster than you. You're not supposed to climb a tree because they can climb. And you're not supposed to swim because they can swim.
And you can't even shit yourself because they're pretty well equipped in that department. Yeah. They're on a home ground there as well. You're not supposed to do any of those things. What you are supposed to do
is walk, keep facing it, and walk slowly away from it.
backwards.
Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of Football Weekly out. Level analysis, isn't it? I've been in Canada. The thing about Canada is there are lots of bears there.
Yeah. He has lots of good advice. It was a very good interview. If anyone speaks Italian, I recommend it.
Okay.
He also says he wants a job in England, by the way, and he makes not entirely unsubtle hints about certain jobs, because he...
Which jobs?
Well, basically, the interviewer says, which ones you have in mind? He said, well, I wouldn't want to name names, but obviously the Arsenal situation is a bit up in the air at the moment. and then at a subsequent point, he says, but I'm not in a rush, you know, I'm quite enjoying doing what I'm doing, and obviously the England job's going to be coming up soon, so there might be a position going at Tottenham. So he sort of was saying, oh, I don't know, but throwing out actually two names in London, which...
Good old Carlo. I'd love to see him back.
We should probably point out, because I don't think we did, for anyone who doesn't know, that McLaren wasn't actually fired, he resigned.
Yes.
And the chairman, or the owner of Forest, Nigel Doughty, has announced he's going to step down at the end of the season as well. So I think Forest fans will be pretty pleased to get rid of, probably more pleased to get rid of Doughty than McLaren.
And Doughty actually falling on his sword because his decision to appoint McLaren was such a horrendous error of judgment that there's no way he can continue as a director.
Well, it's never stopped directors before.
No, but it was just interesting that he actually publicly said, I made such a balls up actually hiring this man that I'd better go now before I do anything else.
McLaren was none too complimentary about him either. So,
Who's going to take over there, do you think, at Forest? Who would want to take over?
I don't know. I've heard talk that the Forest fans would like to see Martin O'Neill take over.
Mm.
And obviously he's won European Cup as a Forest player and is available for work if should the right opportunity present itself.
Mm. There you go. Excellent. Now, big weekend in Italy, Paolo Bandini.
Yes.
Sunday night, Juventus with a 2-0 win over Milan, who came into this game with all sorts of brave intentions about shutting down Pirlo, etc., but did pretty much Zippo in the game, didn't they?
Brave intentions and the brave words of their proud owner, Silvio Berlusconi, 75 in the last few days, yes. Who decided to treat himself as a birthday treat at showing up at their training base the day before a really important game and telling them that they probably need to play more like Barcelona. It was a really interesting game. Juventus, I don't know, they really seemed inspired by where they were playing and the opposition they were playing, whereas Milan came out and they were really flat. It was a really disappointing performance from them. Juventus, for the first time, I think, you could almost take it all the way back to Calciopoli, came into a game against a big opponent, just carrying themselves as if they believed that they belonged on this stage and beating a team like Milan. And they weren't perfect, actually. They really restricted Milan. They gave up virtually, well, I think one shot on target in the entire game and maybe four in total.
Two in total, one on target, yeah.
Ibrahimovic had none. And so there was never any chance whatsoever that they were going to lose the game. They didn't necessarily like they were going to win it until right at the end when Claudio Marchisio got a couple of breaks for his goals. One prodded onto his toe and then prodded in from close range. The other one, an absolute howler from Abbiati. But it was just really sort of, it was exciting to see in a way, actually, because it was the Juventus that we've been missing in Serie A for a lot of years, and the stadium was packed.
Is it because of their stadium?
Well, it was interesting because Pirlo said right after the first home game at the stadium that the stadium was going to make a difference, that it was, he felt, going to be more significant than the San Siro in terms of intimidating away teams and in terms of lifting the players. And I don't know, I've never played in front of 41,000 people, so I don't really know what sort of difference it makes to a player to really be elevated or scared by that. But certainly, he said it felt like something. And all I can say is it was bloody loud.
Mm. Craig, you ever played in front of 41,000?
Played in front of about 41 people for Marine Reserves once.
I've played in front of 65,000, actually. Yeah. There you go.
Champions League final.
I remember that. I was there.
Were you there,
I was
Greg?
One of the 65,000, and I remember thinking...
In Athens?
Yeah, in Athens, and I remember thinking, yeah, why is Jimbo down the Italian end and not up here? Why is he not in the middle, maybe, you know?
Right.
And you did actually get quite a lot of criticism us Liverpool fans for showing bias by where you were standing.
It's
in the stadium.
So unlike Liverpool.
Yeah.
You do realise, Jimbo, that most of those 65,000 people weren't specifically there to see you.
Does that count?
Well, you still played in front of them, you know.
Yeah,
you rocked the joint.
So what we're asking is, did it raise your game?
I think it did, Greg.
I can't remember. I was a bit inebriated.
Sounds like
you know whose birthday it is today, by the way.
Go on.
Zlatan.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he's 30 today. Yeah.
Very unhappy birthday present for him.
And well, indeed. Udinese manager...
oh, look at you, Barry.
Guido, or Francesco Guidolin.
Guidolin.
It's his birthday as well, but I don't know what age he is.
Significantly older.
I suspect he's probably 57.
Up from there.
Not really.
No, yeah. I don't think he's much up from there. He's in that ballpark.
Is he? Okay.
Did you send the card?
Yes.
Right.
Both of them.
Can Napoli win the title, Paolo Bandini?
Yeah, well, that's, of course, that was the other big game on Saturday night, which they won 3-0 at Inter, which was...
So they've beaten Milan 3-0 now, mm-hmm. and Inter 3-0 now, and they've come to... Man City and done pretty well there as
and,
well.
And in between, not won that many of their games, which is why it's actually Juventus who are now top of the table with Udinese. So Guidolin will be having a happy birthday, where Zlatan won't. Yeah, it was a really difficult game to assess this Inter one, because basically I actually felt like Inter started reasonably brightly, and then there was a sending off and a penalty decision with Obi, who got got a second yellow card for fouling someone apparently in the area. Replay showed he wasn't in the area. I have to say that decision. I was going to say that the penalty decision, whilst it was wrong, I feel for the referee a little bit here for taking so much flack on that, because at the speed it was going at and how close they were to the line, I thought it was a penalty initially. It should be the linesman, if anyone, who should be flagging that and telling him that it's not. The first booking was just outrageous, though. Obi had made actually a really, really fantastic tackle to break up a Napoli counter-attack. It was a really excellent example of what you should be doing as a defensive midfielder. Sort of managed to track down a player from behind him, take the ball off him, and turn. Should have been a chance for Inter to get sort of a counter. And instead he got a yellow card. So when he got sent off, Inter, I mean, they lost their heads as well at that point. Ranieri got himself sent off at half-time for telling the fourth official that he was inadequate and various other things. And the aftermath of it has got really nasty, actually, because Inter have sort of raised the spectre of 2006 and saying that now we're being punished.
They're
because we haven't
us.
Revoked that we haven't given back that 2006 title that we were handed.
This is the dangerous thing, though, because when you start to believe that kind of thing, then you do let your heads go when you see a referee give a decision against you. You do think, oh, well, it's...
Yeah,
pro Juve conspiracy,
and essentially Massimo Moratti's come out afterwards and said that, and he's gone really far with it, saying, "Well, we need to see what action we can take about this. I don't ever want to see this referee again." And it has to be said, Gianluca Rocchi, the referee, without evaluating each of those decisions individually, has sent off 7 Inter players in 16 games. But he said, "I never want to see this referee again." The referee has been given a 3-game suspension by the refereeing authorities, so it's got a real sort of edge to it. This aftermath, and Ranieri didn't really do, he didn't really play it down either. While he'd said, "I don't want to talk about that; that would be diabolical," he also didn't really kill it dead. And so it's got a real sort of edge to it, and it's hard to know in real terms what this game meant or didn't mean because of the way Inter lost their heads after that. The things I would say is that for Napoli, it is a very impressive result without Cavani, who was injured, but also that Inter's offside trap was just abominable.
Mm. Paolo, Sebastiano Giovinco, I remember last year I was talking about him, and maybe we didn't give him the credit he deserves, the little fella. He's 24 years old, he's 1.64 metres tall. He's scored 5 goals so far this season. To put that in perspective, his club Parma have only scored 7.
Yeah, he's a joint top scorer in Serie A, along with a player who also scored in the same game, Palacio, who scored for Genoa. Yeah, he's playing really well, Giovinco, and it's really...
I thought he was too small.
Yeah, and a lot of people did. I'm not sure I ever quite bought that. I just wasn't sure if he was quite good enough. But it's hard to know, and as I think is often the case with players like this, is he someone who's just very comfortable in that small pond at Parma, or is he someone who really could be part of a greater orchestra, as they like to call it always in Italy?
Well, he was part of the Juve project, and then he never really got a chance in the first team. Is that fair to say? He's done well for the under-21s. He hasn't really been given that much of a run in the seniors. Is he a new Zola waiting to happen, or is he a small fish?
Well, he's been called up by Prandelli again, so I think the national team may really be the sort of measuring stick for him in the next year or so, because he's certainly not going to be going anywhere before the end of the season, I wouldn't have imagined. But he didn't really get a fair crack of the whip at Juventus, perhaps. I think you could say that. He was sort of initially lauded as the heir to Del Piero. In fact, he sort of signed his contract in the exact spot where Del Piero had signed his contract 15 years earlier. So there was this
bottom of the page, or what?
Yeah, pretty much. But so it was sort of sold as being this player, and then he has certainly always portrayed it as, well, after that, I never really got my chance. Everyone told me because I was too small. He was fielded out on the left.
But he is really small. And it's not just that he's small. He looks a little bit kind of misshapen. I mean, Gianfranco Zola just looked like small but nice and compact, whereas Giovinco's got a big head and a weenie body, and he looks
like Clive Anderson.
I don't know, actually. I've not seen
him. He's misshapen. He's got a big head and a little body.
All right, but he's at least kind of, you know, up there on a level with his guests.
But the problem he had in more practical terms at Juve was that he was there at a time when Del Piero was still a long way from being able to give things up. Actually, Del Piero didn't get on this weekend when they beat Milan, and he's beginning to be that player who's no longer going to be central all the time. But they also just signed Diego, so they had two players playing in that role behind the attack. And so he was getting pushed out to play as Nedved's backup on the left wing, and he's not a winger. He's a through the middle player, and I think that perhaps he could, you know, he could yet even end up back at Juventus for all the things that he said about how badly he was treated. I still wouldn't rule that out.
All right, well, he's looking really impressive. He's looking strong. He's you know, riding out the tackles, scooting past people, scoring goals. He's looking the complete package. But as you say, sometimes it's easier for players to do it at a smaller club than it is on, you know, when on the big stage. There you go.
I know it's only five games in, but and Milan and Inter are both in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened
and
before?
There are only three places for the Champions League this time in Serie A. So
that's because those pesky Germans nicked one, didn't they?
Pesky Germans, yeah. So it is going to be really interesting because there's going to be some big names missing out this season.
I mean, there's lots of things when you look at that league table that are striking. Inter have conceded 11 goals in five
worst
games.
The worst
in division. Juventus, that was why it was such a big deal for Juventus winning this game. It wasn't just about getting them top of the table. They've already put this huge gap between their two most obvious rivals and the teams that you still expect by the end of the season are going to be up there. So it's been an interesting start.
Certainly has. But that brings us to an end of today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to producer Ben, to Greg Ruffley, to Gary Blendenning.
I've been called worse.
To Barry Glendenning and Paolo Bandini, and you, the listener. Hope you'll be with us on Thursday when we look forward to those Euro qualifiers. For now, from all of us.
Love those international weekend pods.
Yeah.
Never
think that's
dull
good?
At all.
You wait till Mondays when we review the game. Yes, sirree.
Did you watch that one?
No. Marvellous. We'll be back with all of that on Thursday. Do join us then.
The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012. Forever evolving, forever football, forever Pro Evo.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.